Hello, Sunsounds listeners. This is Andy Bombick, which means once again it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now close to 5 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled The Class with Wings. And then it's a story about a horse titled Tony. Bug Off, the story of fireflies and friendship. I Dream of Popo. And if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with Black Girl, Black Girl. Celebrate the power of you. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled The Class with Wings. I can't wait for the clock to tick and reach 2:30. Miss Lee pulls the curtains over the window. Then she turns off the lights. She starts the audio of rainforest sounds. We put our heads on our arms and close our ears. Then we become birds. We're varies, sort of like robins, but smaller. For months, you've been in Brazil, says Miss Lee. Lately, you've been extra hungry. You've been gobbling down fruit because it has seeds, and seeds have energy. You're storing up all you can. I'm going to start eating sunflower seeds so I can win the 50-yard dash. It's April now. Some of you are practicing your song. Miss Lee plays a very song on her phone. The notes go downward and sound like they come from a flute. You feel jumpy and can't sit still. That's just what my mom said about me last night. The sun sets. You'd normally pick out a branch to perch on for sleep, but tonight will be different. You're ready. I hear Miss Lee's feet getting closer. Then her finger touches my elbow, and my arms become wings. One by one, you burst up through the trees. I'm flying. Higher and higher, the stars that have been hidden by the forest fill the sky. They help us point north. You're heading back to the United States and Canada, where you were born, where it's easier to catch the huge number of insects you'll need to raise your own young. Other kinds of birds are flying with us. We call to keep from bumping into each other. Because you live near the ground in dark woods, your eyes are large to let in more light. This gives you good night vision. I have big, dark eyes, too. Other birds glide for a while to rest, but you can flop all night without stopping. Your wings are only 4 inches long, but you're strong. I'm always the smallest kid in the class. I want to be like a very. On and on you go. Then dawn gets close. You start to come down. You need a forest for food and a safe place to rest. But the trees here have all been cut down for farms. You keep flying, then find woods along a stream. Your feet finally touch the ground. Then the stupid bell rings. We've gone 168 miles. I get to mark on the map where we're spending the night. The next day, we study South America's mountains and rivers. Then Miss Lee lets us fly. You always fly at night when fewer hawks and falcons are around. They're migrating too. School kids have bullies. Varies have raptors. Except raptors eat you. Look down, says Miss Lee. That's the Amazon. Miles across, red with the soil from the Andes Mountains. We cross the Orinoco River. We see two jaguars in the moonlight. One day, when we land, I hear something strange. Miss Lee's changing the recording. It's the sound of waves. We've reached the Caribbean Sea. To cross over, you'll need to replace all that fat you just burned. So you rest for 3 days, gorging on food. In class, we spend those days studying weather. When a storm passes through, we look at the flag out the window. The wind changed direction, just like we learned. Flying into the wind would make crossing the Caribbean too hard, says Miss Lee. You need a wind from the south. My eyes are closed, but I think she's turned on a little fan. I feel the air on my cheek. Then she touches my elbow. Up you go, everyone, she says. There's a storm behind you. It'll help you fly faster. There's no place to land, so you have to flap all night, all day, and all night again. If my side aches when I'm running, I stop. But the varies can't do that. I peek and see the boy next to me making little circles with his hands. You make the long crossing to the island of Cuba in a single flight. We measure it on the map. It's practically 1,000 miles. Birds that couldn't find enough food when they rested don't have enough energy and fall out of the sky. 2 days later comes another flight over water, 700 miles over the Gulf of Mexico. When you touch down this time, says Miss Lee, you're in Louisiana. People who spot us can't see our life in Brazil or our long flights. I wonder what my grandmother's life was like in Vietnam. Was her trip here dangerous? You're strangers here. You try to stay close to the local birds because they know the dangers. When one gives an alarm call, you hide in a bush. Suddenly, Miss Lee tells us that someone's dogs are chasing us. The energy it takes to fly away from the dogs is energy you needed to keep flying north. You'll have to replace it by spending extra time finding food. I've never thought about it that way. I need to explain this to my dad, since we have dogs. Well, you've still got a long way to go. It's 1,200 miles up the Mississippi River from Louisiana to Wisconsin. Miss Lee shows us a website where people all over the world list the birds they've just seen. A bunch of people in Louisiana saw varies yesterday. That's us. You're moving north with millions of other birds. Since you travel at night, most people don't know there's a bird river over their heads. But if you live somewhere quiet, Miss Lee says, you might hear the birds calling. You're attracted to light, but be careful not to crash into lit-up windows. Some kind people are working to get cities to have fewer lights on in big buildings when migration is at its peak. People see us in Arkansas, then Missouri and Illinois. Then, finally, we're back in Wisconsin. You only weigh an ounce, the same as a pen. But you've flown over 3,000 miles. Very impressive. To celebrate, Miss Lee has set up a field trip to a state park. She passes out binoculars and fold-out guides to local birds. Fields have different birds than forest. Some live high up and others down low. We're near a creek when I hear a bird sing. Its notes sound like they're going down a spiral staircase. I look ahead on the trail, and there it is, hopping on the ground just like we'd learned. It flips over a leaf looking for bugs. Its wings really are the color of cinnamon. I can't believe that I'm seeing something that has seen jaguars and heard monkeys. Then it turns its head, and its big black eye looks right into mine. I think it knows I'm a very too. And now a story about a horse named Tony. That was his name. He was such a wonderful horse and pulled a milk truck for Tom, the young driver. Tom Jones, in the early hours of the morning, pulling the wagon loaded with milk, butter, and eggs. Tony was all white, large, sturdy, with wide, gentle eyes and a ton of love. He would wait patiently while Tom jumped off the wagon to put my milk and eggs on my doorstep. It was early in the morning, around 3 a.m., but I was up and would go out and pat Tony with my gentle arms. And his head would bow down, and his eyes would glow. And Tom would say, "Nice to see you out so early, sir." And Tony always looks for you, too. "Wouldn't miss Tony for the world," I would reply sturdily, giving Tony another pat. "He is such a wonderful horse and so handsome. I am sure he heard that." Tom would smile widely as he got back into the truck. And as they pulled away, I knew that Tony did a little dance. Bug Off, a story of fireflies and friendship. Maud had never seen a firefly until she moved from the city to the country. "They sparkle like little firecrackers," she remarked one night, "but without all the noise." Understandably, Maud was very excited when she discovered that one of her new neighbors, Louise, had started a Bug of the Month club. "I can learn about fireflies and make some friends," she thought. But as she read the fine print, she saw that she needed to give a speech about a bug to be invited to join. "How hard can that be?" she asked herself. With the help of several firefly books from the library, Maud painstakingly recorded and memorized some illuminating firefly facts. "Louise will love this one and this one, and especially this one," she said. On the night of her speech, Maud caught 11 fireflies. She gently placed them in a special lantern that had a screen on top so the fireflies could breathe. But when she arrived at the June meeting of the Bug of the Month Club, all Louise said was, "Make it snappy, Maud. We haven't got all night." So with shaky knees, Maud began. "Firefly is another name for the lightning bug. Their glow comes from a light-emitting organ in their bodies. Did you know that different kinds of grown-up fireflies might flash orange or yellow or even green? They blink their lights to tell one another things like, 'I like your light,' or 'It feels like it's going to rain.'" "Cool," said Amy and Victor and Ashley and Donald, applauding Maud's thoughtful selection of firefly facts. Louise, Maud noticed, was not applauding. "She must be waiting until the end of my speech," Maud guessed. "There are more than 2,000 species of fireflies, but only some kinds flash," said Maud. "For example, fireflies in western states like California and Colorado don't." "Too bad," said Amy and Victor, Louise, Maud noticed, let out a long, exasperated, noisy yawn. So Maud tried harder. People can use fireflies to light their way in caves, through woods, and in their own bedrooms like I do, said Maud, but only for a day. Then I let them go. See the moist paper towel at the bottom of my firefly lantern? I keep it there in case the fireflies are thirsty. Maud held up her lantern. 11 fireflies happily blinked on and off. Oh, I almost forgot. Don't let your pets eat fireflies. They taste bitter and can be poisonous, she added. Yikes, said Donald and Ashley, who had dogs and cats and rabbits. Louise, Maud noticed, was tapping her foot. Hurry up, Maud, she said. So Maud hurried. A firefly's light contains an important substance that some scientists believe will enable them to cure diseases, clean up water pollution, and learn about life on other planets. That's what I want to do when I go to college. Study fireflies, said Maud. Way to go, said Amy and Victor and Donald and Ashley. Louise folded her arms. Time to wrap it up, Maud, she said. But I have so much more to share, thought Maud. Okay, she said politely, thinking that Louise must like short speeches. In conclusion, said Maud, the firefly population is dwindling as we speak, because many humans are not paying enough attention to what these little creatures need in order to survive. You are all welcome to visit my backyard tomorrow night to see what I do to keep fireflies safe. Maud stepped back. Thank you for your time, she told Louise and other members of the Bug of the Month Club. I will sparkle like a firefly if Louise invites me to join her club, she thought. Instead, Louise slowly walked over to a poster tacked to a tree. I am not pleased, she hissed. No one said a word. We obviously know something that Maud doesn't, said Louise, and that is that the firefly, or lightning bug, belongs to the beetle family. And beetles are not, I repeat, are not true bugs. She pointed at the poster. These are true bugs, she said, and read the whole list. Ambush bug, assassin bug, bed bug, big-eyed bug, damsel bug, pirate bug, plant bug, seed bug, soldier bug, stink bug, and water bug. The facts about true beagles are indisputable, said Louise. Everyone, please take a turn. A bug has a head like a triangle, said Amy. A firefly does not, said Louise. A bug has a mouth like a beak, said Donald. A firefly does not, said Louise. A bug has two wings on each side, for a total of 4 altogether, said Ashley. Some fireflies also have 4 wings, said Louise, but some female fireflies have no wings. And most importantly, said Victor, a bug may have the word bug as part of its name. But that doesn't necessarily make it a bug, said Ashley. Like a lightning bug, said Donald, which, as Louise told us, is actually a beetle, finished Amy. Beetles and bugs are not the same at all, said the Bug of the Month Club members in unison, but they are both insects. There you have it, said Louise. Thank you, members. And to Maud, she said, bye-bye, Firefly. Time for you to bug off. Then to make matters worse, Louise removed the top of Maud's lantern and dumped out all 11 fireflies. Not one of them flashed orange or yellow, or even green, as they flew away. Maud's cheeks burned, and so did the tips of her ears. She was mortified. Everyone must think I'm so dumb, Maud thought. She picked up her empty firefly lantern and walked home in the dark. Louise, makes me so mad, Maud thought. With each step, she grew even madder. Someday, I am going to let Louise have it for being rude and nasty, she decided. The next night, there was a spectacular firefly show in Maud's backyard. The neighbors noticed, so did members of the Bug of the Month Club, who had liked Maud's speech so much that they came over to see for themselves exactly what she was doing to protect fireflies. Maud was surprised and happy to see them. It's important to create a peaceful, firefly-friendly habitat, Maud explained, where fireflies can live and breathe and stay healthy. I keep outside lights off because fireflies like to signal to one another in the dark and may not come here if the lights are on. I found pieces of dead logs in the woods and put them under these pine trees because firefly eggs, which can glow too, need a natural place to hatch and grow. Once they hatch into little worms or larvae, I look for snails and slugs for them to eat until they grow up to be adult fireflies. And I plant flowers because some adult fireflies like their nectar and pollen. Zinnias are my favorite flowers. I want to save the firefly, said Amy. So do we, said Victor and Donald and Ashley, and some other neighbors too. At the July meeting of the Bug of the Month Club, Louise wondered what had happened to all of her members, until she walked around the neighborhood and saw everyone in Maud's backyard at a Save the Firefly meeting. Louise watched. She listened. She said to herself, there are things that even a bug genius like me can learn. Maud watched. She listened. She thought, I think it's about time for me to let Louise have it. And she did. Welcome to the Save the Firefly Club, Louise, said Maud. The more dedicated and passionate members we get, the better chance the firefly will have to make it in this often cruel world of ours. At the August meeting of the Bug of the Month Club, Louise announced that she was changing her club's name to the Insect of the Month Club, and that Maud, whom Louise herself had personally invited, would be a member after all. I should not have been so hard to please, said Louise. From now on, anyone can join my club. And by the way, the firefly is now one of my favorite insects. Maud sparkled like a firefly. I dream of Popo. When a young girl and her family immigrate from Taiwan to America, she leaves behind her beloved Popo, her grandmother. She misses her Popo every day. But even if their visits are fleeting, their love is ever true and strong. I dream with Popo as she rocks me in her arms. She sings BXN Baby Gan. In my heart I hear my baby, my heart, my baby, my love. I walk with Popo in the park, squeezing her finger in my chubby palm. When I wobble, she holds me up. She pushes me on the swing and lifts me to hear the birds sing. I bow to Popo on New Year's Day. She asks if I've been good and gives me a red envelope. Then she fries up crispy, gooey, sweet New Year's cakes, so hot they almost burn my tongue. I sit with Popo and she shows me where I'm going to live. Here is Taiwan, so tiny, surrounded by blue. There is San Diego, far, far away. You will learn and see many new things, she says. I wave at Popo before I board my flight with Mama and Baba. The airplane thrums like the biggest cat I've ever seen. Fly safely, Popo says. Call me every week and tell me about your adventures. I think of Popo as I meet new friends, kids with hair of every color and skin of every shade. They say, hi. I say, hi, ni ho. I talk to Popo from across the sea. I'm learning a new language, I say, and I miss your dumplings. I'll make them for you when you visit, she says. I draw Popo at my new school. Below the picture, I write my grandma, though it feels strange to call her that. I learn other words, too. Dumplings, motorcycle, taxi, home, San Diego, teacher, school bus, friend, new house, palm tree. After a while, the words form easier on my tongue. I hug Popo when I come back to visit. Now, ni ho is what feels strange in my mouth. Other words, too, are hard to catch, like fish in a deep well. I ask Mama why I can't talk to Popo like before. You can still hug her as tight as before, she says. I do. Popo hugs me even tighter. I eat with Popo in her house, surrounded by the fragrance of guhol blossoms. She cooks my favorite dumplings, dipped in soy sauce and sesame oil. Her house looks smaller than I remember, but everything smells the same. Popo looks smaller, too. Her hair is more white. When I board the plane again, Popo packs me dumplings to eat on the way. I wonder how she'll look when I see her again. I pray for Popo when we hear she is sick. I sing to her as she lies in bed, frail under heavy blankets. I wish I could reach across the ocean and hold her up. She whispers to me in a voice soft as birdsong, Bijin, my baby, my heart. It's a promise and a kiss. I dream of Popo coming to me while I sleep. I say, ni ho. She says, hello. I say, wo ani. She says, I love you too. A breeze brushes my face, rich with the scent of guhao. I tell Popo about my adventures, and she smiles. And I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with a picture book titled Black Girl, Black Girl, Celebrate the Power of You. Dear girl, black girl, rise up. It's time. It's a new day and a chance to shine. And these are some quotes that she has on the wall. If you are always trying to be normal, you will never know how amazing you can be, by Maya Angelou. And here's one by Michelle Obama. There is grace in being willing to know and hear others. Shine like the moon. You're one of a kind, radiant and fierce, a brilliant young mind. A mind filled with wonder, creativity, and dreams. Shape your own history like these amazing queens. Dear girl, black girl, what do you see? That's Kamala Harris, America's 49th VP. This is just the beginning. So much more to behold. There's Wilma Rudolph, 3 Olympic medals, all gold. Take a breath, close your eyes, and now picture this feat. A young Claudette Colvin wouldn't give up her bus seat. Dear girl, black girl, what's that music you hear? It's Miriam Makeba, sounding jazzy in your ear. Now I wonder, dear girl, if you've ever been taught of May Carol Jemison, first black female astronaut. Learn your rich history. It's your roots, your foundation. That's why Adelaide Kesley Hayford championed education. Dear girl, black girl, ever dream you could fly? Watch Misty Copeland gracefully jetty to the sky. Live life, you trailblazer, with courage and focus. Viola Desmond was a businesswoman with purpose. In the end, my dear girl, write your story your way. You can be a creative visionary like Ava DuVernay. Dear girl, black girl, what do you see? I see so many faces that look like me. Indeed, precious girl, all these faces you see were once like you, uncertain of their destiny. Rise with passion. Your journey starts today. An adventure awaits. There's no time for delay. Dear girl, black girl, this one is written for you. There's no one on earth who can do what you do. Born to be great, your excellence shines from within. You own half the sky, but your poetry's yet written. Go change the world, make it a better place. Trust in your fierce spirit and magnificent grace. Dear girl, black girl, I believe in you so. Let's start your journey. Ready, set, go. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now close to 5 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Darcy believes in love at first sight. She spent her whole life waiting for that perfect, magical moment. But right now, her life is anything but perfect. After a music festival, she's stranded at a bus station until morning, the day before she leaves for college. Her phone is dead, she has no cash, and she's convinced nothing good can come of this night. But then she meets Russell. Russell, cute and nice, funny and kind. This is the moment and the guy she's been waiting for. And they have until sunrise to walk and talk and connect. Over the course of this one fateful night, filled with football field picnics, night swimming, and escape artist dogs, Darcy and Russell's lives will change forever. They'll discover things they never imagined about each other and about themselves. But can you really know someone after only a handful of hours? Is it possible to fall in love in just one day? And is it worth saying hello when you know you're destined for a goodbye? Okay, last week, Darcy thought that she was leaving the mansion, but got talked into staying for dinner with Wiley Sanders and his three ex-wives and all of their kids sitting around the dinner table, including Russell, who isn't making eye contact with Darcy. And that's where I left off last week. Artie grabbed Russell's hand and started pulling him toward the kitchen. Russell met my eyes, and I could tell that this was the last place he wanted to be, anywhere in proximity to me. "Can we go swimming?" he practically yelled. "Take it down a notch, bud," Wiley said. "Yeah," Chloe agreed, glancing upstairs. "Your nephew is sleeping." I bumped on nephew before I remembered how this worked. Presumably, one of Wiley's older children, like Connor, must have kids of their own, which would mean that this three-year-old was someone's uncle. "Want some pasta, kid?" Priya asked, taking her pot off the stove. Artie's eyes lit up. "Yes, please," he said. "I like the bow kind, with a little butter and the cheese from the green can." "I have this great sauce. No, thank you. At least try it." "Hey, buddy," Montana said, walking over to the kitchen. She tickle lunged at Artie, who shrieked in delight and ran a few feet away. "Dinner almost ready, P." "Fishbowl is ready," Wallace called, sounding irritated. "Are we not playing?" "After dinner," Sydney said, clapping her hands together. "I need to eat something or I get grumpy." "Get grumpy?" Connor asked. She whacked him on the arm. "Before we eat," Wiley Sanders said, he clapped his hand on Russell's shoulder, "we need to have a chat." Russell sighed, "Yeah." "What's happening?" Montana asked. "Russ is in trouble, Chloe said in a low voice. Not trouble exactly, Wiley said, then paused. Well, actually, yeah, trouble. Yikes, Priya said as she started pulling down bowls from a cabinet. And no offense, Doug said, hustling into the kitchen, but we might not wait. Good luck, Montana said. She cleared her throat and rested her hand on her heart. Is it a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done? It is a far, far better rest that I go to. Okay, Russell said, shaking his head. We don't need to make this worse. He headed out of the room, following his dad, but then stopped and turned back to me. So you're going to go? His voice was icy, but not believably so, like a lake that looked frozen but would crack with the first step. Yep, I made sure to keep my tone clipped. If I'd needed another reason to keep being mad at him, all I had to do was look around me. This whole life Russell had that he'd kept from me, spinning an entirely new picture just for kicks. So I guess this is it? Guess it is. Don't go on my account. I wasn't ever going to stay. I'm leaving as soon as I get my stuff back. I'm not sure where it went. I'll find Kendrick, Bronwyn said, setting down her iPad and striding out of the kitchen. Her response made me all too aware that everyone around us could hear our conversation, and that nobody was making any effort to disguise the fact that they were listening. Well, bye, I folded my arms. Bye. We looked at each other for a moment, but Russell didn't make any move to leave. And it hit me all at once that this was how it ended. That our night, faded and random, wonderful and terrible, was over. Okay, Wiley said after a moment in which the silence stretched on to the point of uncomfortable. He gave me a smile that seemed real. Lovely to meet you, Darcy. Get home safe. Thank you for everything, I said, meaning it, trying to put all the warmth in my tone that I was keeping from Russell. Wiley gave me a nod and headed down the hallway. Russell looked at me for a moment longer, his eyes searching mine. He took a breath. Russ, Wiley called. He hesitated for 1 second more, then turned and left the room, following his dad. I watched him go, trying to ignore the pull I felt in my stomach. This was what I wanted, after all. It was. So why did this feel so awful? Where's home? Chloe asked me. I jumped slightly. I hadn't realized she'd ended up right next to me. L.A. How are you getting there? She was watching me closely, her dark blue eyes slightly narrowed. I'll get a bus. I'm sure there will be one soon. And even if there wasn't, I would wait. But I didn't think I needed to share that part with Chloe. A bus? Sorry, Kendrick said, hurrying into the kitchen. He was carrying my duffel, my canvas bag, and the tent. These were put in the Bleecker Street guest house. I thought you were staying. I took them from him. No, I'm heading out, but thanks so much. Want some pasta, Kendrick? Pyrrha called. He shook his head. I wish. I'm Cato right now. Your loss. It literally is, he said, flexing a bicep. 10 pounds and counting. Wait, Chloe said, shaking her head. I'm not sure we should let you go to the bus station alone. No, it's really fine, I said, as I pulled up my rideshare app. My phone was charged enough now for me to call an Uber, and though I didn't have a huge amount of money in my account, it looked like I had enough for the ride to the bus station. I'd just wait there for the next available bus and be on my way back to L.A. Let me drive you down to the gates, Kendrick said. I can get the golf cart. I shook my head, trying not to look exasperated. Maybe this was what having millions of dollars did to you. I was certainly capable of walking down a driveway. That's okay, but thank you. It's a long driveway, Montana said, raising an eyebrow at me. I'd take him up on it. I'm fine. Well, Kendrick said a little uncertainly, just wave to the camera when you get to the bottom of the gates. Security will open the door for you. You have a ride coming? Uh-huh, I lied. I saw that Chloe was looking at me closely, her expression skeptical. I was sure she was going to say something, but then Priya yelled that dinner was ready. In the stampede for food that followed, I was able to shout a goodbye and thank you in the general direction of the room, then grab my stuff and head back to the entrance hall. In the foyer, I took one more look at the Chloe and Wiley sci-fi desert picture, then walked outside, closing the door quickly behind me so that Andy wouldn't get out. I stood there on the step for just a moment, the quiet, a contrast to the chaos in the house. I felt like I was turning off a movie halfway through, or leaving a play at intermission, like the story was going to continue on without me, and I wouldn't know how it ended. I shook my head and walked down the steps, pausing to look at the balloon dog for one last moment before crossing the lawn to the gravel driveway. The fact was, I needed to leave, and I was positive Russell wanted me to go just as badly as I wanted to. But if that was the case, why had my stuff been brought to one of the guest houses? I only let myself think about this for a second before I pushed it away. It was probably just crossed wires, nothing else. I looked up and suddenly understood why Kendrick had offered to drive me. The driveway was gravel, impossibly long, with enormous palm trees planted on either side of it. It was the kind of driveway I'd only seen in movies. I half expected to see carriages arriving for a ball, or Ethan Hunt's sports car driving up it. At the end, a very long way off, I could see a set of metal gates. It looked like there was a WS worked into the iron. Okay, I said, because what else was there to do except start the trek? But now that I was no longer inside a house with Wiley Sanders himself, I figured it would at least be okay to wear his merch. I set the duffel and tent down and dug my sweatshirt out of my canvas bag, looking at it for just a second, thinking how strange it was that I'd now met him. That Wiley was no longer just an image on a sweatshirt or a voice in a song. He was an actual person who'd really tried to make me feel welcome. I pulled it on. It was a chilly, clear night, the sky an inky dark blue with a few stars visible. Then I picked up the duffel and tent and walked down the driveway. I couldn't help thinking back on how nice everyone had seemed. It was nothing like I'd thought it would be. They were bantering and joking together, exes and current partners and kids all sitting around a table as a family. All these siblings and half-siblings getting along and hanging out. And it was clear they all really liked each other. Unbidden, I flashed back to the one and only meal I'd shared with my three half-siblings. How awkward it had been, how my defenses had been up going in, and how it only got worse every time I had to watch Gillian mothering them, laughing with them, helping to cut their food, not doing anything extraordinary, just being a regular mom. How I'd decided after that it was proof that it was better to keep things separated, me and my dad, Gillian and her real family, that trying to do stuff like have dinners was just too complicated. Katie coughed discreetly, more complicated than five ex-wives and a millions of dollars and the world press reporting on it. Even as I tried to push it away, I thought about how Jillian's daughter Freya kept requesting to be my friend on Instagram, how I kept ignoring it. And all at once, it didn't feel like I was taking the high road or staying above it all. It just seemed small and mean. I shook my head and made myself keep walking. No sound except my sandals crunching over gravel. My thoughts kept returning to the happy, busy world I'd just left. Everyone sitting down to a pasta dinner as a family, preparing to play fishbowl, whatever that was. Now that I'd experienced it firsthand, it was like I could feel the depth of Russell's lies. All the people he'd just erased when he told me he was an only child. I mean, it's like you were being honest about Gillian, Katie pointed out, or Stanwich. But she wasn't actively lying, Dee Dee countered. She was just eluding the truth. I think it's the same thing, Katie said, and that Darcy shouldn't be mad at him for something she was doing. Maybe that's why she is mad, Dee Dee suggested. I increased my pace, trying to ignore this. None of it mattered after all. I wasn't going to see these people ever again. I was leaving tomorrow. I was off to the barren wasteland that was Connecticut. Even if I could understand a little more where Russell was coming from, what was the point of any of it? We'd said goodbye. It was over. What I needed now was to put all of this behind me and think about my next steps. I'd get to the gates, call my Uber. During the ride to the station, I could look up the next bus to L.A. My phone rang in my bag, breaking the quiet of the night and startling me. It had been off for so much of tonight, it was almost like I'd forgotten that it was on and working now, and people could use it to reach me. Jillian Bedelu was the name on my screen. I stared at it for a moment like this was a mirage that would disappear instantly. My mother's British husband, Antony, last name was pronounced Bewley, which was always hard to remember when I saw it written out. Most of the very few conversations I'd had with Antony had revolved around him telling me not to pronounce certain letters in his name. I stared down at my phone trying to figure out what was happening. Why was Jillian calling me when it was getting close to 2 in the morning, her time? Why was she calling me at all? Unless, a cold fear gripped me, what if she wasn't calling me? What if something had happened? I stopped walking and slid my finger across the screen, answering the call before it went to voicemail. Hello? Darcy? It was Jillian's voice, and I felt a clear flash of relief shoot through me. Hi, I said. It's late here. I know. Her voice was tense and angry, and my relief was immediately replaced with irritation, like someone had flipped a switch, changed electrical currents. I've received a call from a lawyer in Las Vegas. What? I dropped my duffel and the tent onto the gravel. They were really heavy. CJ called you? Why was CJ calling my mother when she'd made me sign a legally binding document that said I wasn't allowed to talk to anyone? Why would she be expanding the circle of people who knew about this, rather than trying to make it smaller? No, some yawning person named Sarah. I could hear the anger in my mother's words, running just underneath them like water. Waking me up, waking Antony up. I'm sorry that she woke up Antony, I said, meaning it. After all, he didn't have anything to do with this. But why would she call you? I don't know, Gillian snapped. She seemed to think I would know something about what you've been up to. and when I asked why she was calling so late, it became clear she thought I was still in England. Oh, that one actually was on me, but I wasn't about to apologize for it. This situation was starting to make a little more sense. Sarah must have been trying to do damage control, make sure I hadn't talked to anyone before I signed the NDA. What is this, Darcy? What did you do? Just like that, I was irritated, my hackles up the way I only ever felt when talking to Gillian. I didn't do anything. Well, Katie said. Dee Dee added. I didn't do anything you need to concern yourself with, I amended. Well, clearly you did, Gillian snapped. And for just a second, I could hear something underneath her annoyance. Worry. I remembered how my heart had seized when I thought, just for a moment, that something might have happened to her. Had she had the same thing when she'd gotten a middle-of-the-night call about me? I'm fine, I said, running my hand over my eyes. All of a sudden, though, I felt just how long the night had been. Everything hitting me at once. I was wrung out and exhausted in a bone-deep way. I dropped the last thing I'd been holding, my canvas bag, and then I joined it, sinking down onto the gravel. I felt my lower lip tremble. I wanted to be at home, in my own state, in my own bed. I wanted someone to bring me something to eat and brush my hair back from my forehead and tell me that everything would be okay. I wanted my mother. Darcy? Gillian's voice was a little more hesitant now, some of the anger gone. And my mother was right there. She was with me now, just on the other end of the phone. But this was the whole problem, and always had been, because while most of the time I told myself I was fine with the fact I didn't have a mother, that Gillian was never going to be what I wanted her to be, at certain moments, like now, it was as if the curtain was pulled back, and suddenly all I could see was the gulf between what I wanted and what I had. And what I had was so little. I shook my head, even though I knew Gillian couldn't see me, and sat up straighter. She didn't get to know anything about my night. It was information she wasn't entitled to, a level of clearance she hadn't earned. I'm fine, I repeated, even as I could feel that tears were incipient, threatening to spill. You don't sound fine. Oh, how would you know, I snapped, from all your experience with me? From the 12 hours total you've spent with me over the last 10 years? I heard her draw in a sharp breath over the other end of the phone, the kind you take when someone sucker punches you. That's not fair. I'm trying. Oh, you're trying? All righty then, great. So now everything is fixed? Look, Gillian said, and I could hear the irritation in her voice again. I was woken up in the middle of the night. Oh, I'm sorry, okay? My voice was rising. I didn't know they were going to call you. I didn't tell them to. Are you in trouble? I don't understand why they called me at all. I'm not in trouble. And they called you because they were under the mistaken impression that I had a mother. I'll be sure to correct them on that account, okay? She didn't say anything, but somehow I could hear the hurt in her silence, radiating out over the phone line, crossing the country from her in Connecticut to me in Nevada. Well, her voice was going into cold and frosty mode, which always made her sound extra British. The next 4 years will certainly be fun. That's your doing, I reminded her. I didn't ask you for any favors. No, but you accepted them. I blinked at that, surprised into silence. This was technically true, but we can talk about this another time. Gillian sounded like she was trying to pull us back to more solid ground. not this dangerous place where we might accidentally tell the truth, but are you okay? Do you need something? That was all it took for my chin to start wobbling. I needed so much from her over the years. I needed things I'd never even admitted to myself because it would just be that much harder when I never got them. No, I was trying to control my voice even as I heard it crack. Sorry that you were woken up. It won't happen again. Then I ended the call. I held the phone in my hand for a moment, tears balanced on the edge of my lashes, waiting to see if she'd call back, waiting to see if she would have heard something in my voice, known something, known that I needed her right then. But the phone remained silent, and I could practically see it in my mind, Jillian setting the phone on her nightstand, getting back into bed, murmuring an apology to Anthony, not giving this another thought. I ran my hands through my hair and took a shaky breath. I was fine. I was more than fine. I was figuring things out on my own. I didn't need her. Really? Katie whispered, her voice gentle. And that was all it took. The tears spilled over, and I put my hands over my eyes and cried. I didn't care in that moment that I was sobbing in the driveway of an international celebrity. I gave up caring if anyone saw me because there was no stopping this. I was crying for my mom and all that I'd wanted and hadn't gotten, and how exhausting it was to pretend that I didn't need her or want her when it was a flimsy lie that I wasn't even fooling me. I was crying for the way that even when she was saying all the right things, I couldn't trust that she meant it. I was crying for the way I'd spoken to her and how I already regretted it. And unfortunately, this is where I'm going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the novel, The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.